boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day might bring forth.
The Federal Civil Defense Administration is proud to present Orson Welles, Mona Freeman, and Marshall Thompson, starring in Tomorrow, a full one-hour radio drama transcribed about the shape of things that could come to America. From the book by the distinguished American novelist Philip Wiley, adapted for radio by Milton Geiger, and directed by William Karn. Now, Orson Welles as your narrator, Mona Freeman as Lenore Bailey, and Marshall Thompson as Lieutenant Chuck Cotter in Tomorrow.
One man saw it come, actually saw it. Coley Borden saw it. He stood watching it cannonade down the twilight sky to target zero and to end an entire era in human history. There's no memorial over Coley Borden's last resting place. His grave is our atmosphere, where in one split instant his molecules joined the envelope of gases that surround the earth. But of the events written on the air, his molecules now inhabit shall be his epitaph. So be it. Ave, Coley Borden. Hail. And amen.
There it is, the practice alert. Let's go, Dad.
Dad, can't you at least finish dinner?
Sorry, Beth, you'll have to excuse us.
It's Charles' first day home on leave.
Oh, I'll be home a month, Mother. Don't make me the heavy if they got to leave.
Civil defense has gotten to be a big thing with some of us, son.
It's a night out. Instead of just going bowling with the boys.
Upstairs, Ted. Ted mans his ham radio during the alert.
Well, go up and ham your radio, man.
Let's go, Dad. I'm not appreciated here.
Sorry, Beth. Chuck, see you later.
Who knows, Dad? A powerful force of jet bombers from ruthless Monaco might be heading our way.
It's extremely funny, son.
I'm sorry, Charles.
Why? It's good to see them so interested in something.
Then you won't mind about Lenore Bailey.
She in it, too?
And how?
Hey, that dates you, Mom. And how?
Are you going to drop in next door and talk to her?
Any dates set for the wedding yet?
Not that I know of.
Well, maybe I'll just walk past the front porch and whistle for her.
Charles Connor, if you dare.
I dare. I'm your brave soldier boy.
Don't you dare. You're not school kids anymore.
Well, maybe it's too late anyhow.
Well, how do you mean?
You say she's in civil defense, and how?
I didn't hear her back the car out yet.
Hmm. Excuse me, Mama, will you, Mom?
Learn to back up.
Watch it, soldier. Chuck!
Not Lenore Bailey.
Lieutenant Chuck Connor. What are you doing in town?
Lenore Bailey, whatever prompted you to leave Mars?
Well, if you're referring to my outfit, it's a decontamination suit. Come on, jump in and drive me to CD Sector Headquarters.
Well, I don't know what my Earth girls will say, but you're up. Anybody else in that decontamination suit would look unbecoming, but on you, it looks awful.
Well, thank you. Now, tell me about you.
Oh, desk job, intelligence officer.
Thanks to your degree in architecture?
Tell me about you and Kit Sloan.
Well, I guess your mother wrote you we were engaged.
Somewhat to my mild surprise.
Ah, you knew I always liked Kit. Well, we dated even when I was dancing around with you.
Yeah, I just never thought that Kit Sloan would ever get interested in anyone but himself.
Oh, that's not fair, Chuck.
Of course, your being officially the most beautiful girl in the sister cities might have just appealed to his ego.
Well, we won't talk about it anymore. I'm a little surprised, that's all.
So was I, remember? And are you happy inside of that radiation suit?
Oh, very much. I majored in science, you know, before I quit college. Is that what you meant, though?
Lenora Bailey, girl Geigerman. You know what I meant.
Oh, here's the high school. Sector headquarters.
Minerva Sloan, formidable mother of Kit Sloan, was homeward bound from being formidable at a director's meeting of the Mercantile Trust Company when the practice alert sounded. And it did ill content her. On downtown Central Avenue, traffic was stopped solid, six cars abreast. Cars had stopped, doors had popped open, and people had scurried obediently to the vaulted entries of great skyscrapers and other shelter areas, all except Minerva Sloan. She sat furiously in her limousine, being formidable.
Willis, get us out of this jam at once.
I'm afraid I can't, Mrs. Sloan.
Consign me a telephone.
You're not supposed to use the phone during an alert, ma'am.
Are you in league with these doddering adult infants at play?
No, ma'am, Mrs. Sloan.
Then find a place with a telephone.
Goldie Borden talking.
This is Minerva. Have you put the breakfast edition to bed yet?
Minerva, you're not supposed to use the phone during civil defense.
Foolishness is going to stop, Coley.
Why? What foolishness is that?
Well, this so-called civil defense. You're to kill the whole thing beginning right now.
Minerva, it's been the transcript's policy to back up civil defense in Green Prairie. If you want to spank it, why not do it across the river, since River City doesn't have the civil defense anyway. Minerva?
I'm here, but I'll be there. Don't leave.
Minerva!
I'm a busy woman, Coley. And when I want to get home after a hard day, I want to relax with my guests and on time.
But just suppose...
Two of the biggest cities in the Midwest tied up for 2 hours, and River City an innocent bystander at that, at the evening rush hour of all times.
At the evening rush hours is when a bomb is most likely to happen.
Coley, do you know what I think? I think civil defense is communist-inspired.
Oh, Minerva, for heaven's sake.
Terrorize people about a bomb attack while they're completely diverted and weakened in their effort to wipe out dangerous radicals right here at home.
Now, wait a minute, Minerva. Isn't it the other way around? If you were an enemy, wouldn't you rather see us neglect our atomic defense while we spent our time chasing college professors around? You bet you would. Because in a few years, you'd be in a position to say to us, okay, bombs, you've had it. We've got weapons you haven't got any answers for. So now you sit still while we give all the orders.
Coley, how is your sweet wife since the accident?
She's moving around pretty fair now. But...
Then I won't have to replace you, will I, Coley? I'm sorry you have to stay late. But make it strong, Coley. Bye-bye.
Hurt in CD alert, the breakfast banner lines yammered. Sister cities paralyzed. Outrageous and unnecessary, say River City Solons.
Air raid siren sending thousands cowering into shelters, keynoted at 6 p.m. yesterday. The onset of a great rush hour fiasco in which 16 were injured and unestimated damage done to property. How can they say a thing like that in times like this?
It's a free country.
And a free press, I may add.
Your boss, Minerva Sloan, decides how free the transcript is.
I wouldn't say that. Banking's Minerva's racket.
Well, I'm going next door.
What for?
Well, Henry Connor went to college with Coley Borden. Maybe he can talk to Mr. Borden about civil defense.
Won't do a bit of good, baby.
I'd rather you didn't see Chuck Connor, Lenore.
Oh, don't worry about Chuck, Mother. He understands about me and Kit.
Well, he's got to admit, Kit Sloan's one hell of a guy.
Don't start anything now, Bruce.
He's not starting anything, Mother. What do you mean, don't start anything?
What are you getting worked up about?
Look, I'm marrying Kit Sloan because I want to. I got that perfectly straight. And not to bail the Bailey family out of any difficulties it's in. So there's nothing that Father can say that will change my mind about Kit. He can't start anything. I'm going next door to talk to Mr. Connor.
You shouldn't have told her about me, Netta.
All I said to Lenore was that marrying Kit Sloan would help out her old man an awful lot.
Did you say anything about the bank at all?
No, No, I told you. I said you were in a little financial difficulty.
A little? $5,000, that's all. Oh, how did I know old John Jessup would be back to his deposit box before the first of the year? If Minerva hadn't made up the shortage, you know where I'd be, don't you?
I know where you'd be if Minerva's boy wasn't marrying Lenore. So don't start anything with Lenore.
That's a dirty trick on her.
She's making the best match in Green Prairie. You heard her. She loves Kit. She wants to marry him. She isn't doing it for you at all.
Dirty, lousy, low-down trick.
You can say that! After all the trouble me and Minerva went to settle this thing.
Minerva and you. Her folks owned the railroad that you were the wrong side of the tracks from. Now all of a sudden, pals.
Bruce Bailey, I believe you're drunk at breakfast.
So?
Oh, stop here, Kit.
Just a turn around the block, huh?
I'm expected at the meeting, Kit. I'll be late.
Oh, look, I hardly get to talk to my fiancé. Why do you have to go to this meeting?
Ask your mother. It's a protest meeting over the story in the transcript this morning.
I'll be rough on Mother. She likes you.
Why?
She admires a fighter. Thinks you'd be wonderful for me. I'm 33, you know. I'm getting on. I never told you the catechism she put me through when I said I was interested in you.
Oh?
Grandparents long lived, how many children, state number of male heirs, how many living, et cetera, et cetera. All mothers determined to keep the Sloan line alive.
Does she reckon on the even chance it'd be a girl?
She reckons on your persistence.
I'm not sure I like that.
Well, I'm not always sure you like me.
I'm a little upset over that news article today.
And not because Chuck Connor is home on leave, the lad next door.
No, not at all.
What does he do in uniform?
Intelligence.
Desk job, huh?
He was too young for service in the war. Perhaps he'd have won a pound of medals just like you.
Do I talk about it?
Oh, I'm sorry, Kit.
See you for dinner tomorrow night?
Mm-hmm. 6:00.
Okay, it's a deal.
Oh, stop here, Kit. This is it.
Kit Sloan didn't talk about his medals, but he was deeply sensitive about them, having ridden the best horses and the fastest cars. He had felt an affinity for the Air Force during the war, but when the first Nazi bullets began to shred the delicate tissues of his fighter plane, he dived clear, leaving two wingmates exposed to a fate which both soon met heroically, and leaving no one to expose his cowardice. Happily for him, his group was assigned to the interception of buzz bombs. Buzz bombs were dangerous, but they didn't shoot back at a man with personal malice. If you had the correct reflexes, as Kit Sloan did, you survived. Kit became quite a hero, in fact, to everybody but Kit Sloan, who knew the truth. At the civil defense meeting in Henry Connor's sector, it was moved, seconded, and passed that Henry Connor, who knew Coley Borden closely, talked to Coley Borden about that damaging story in the transcript, just in case Coley wasn't entirely under the iron thumb of Minerva Sloan.
And I'm worried, Coley. No turnout at all at the protest meeting. People are quitting civil defense.
I'm sorry it disturbs you, Hank.
It disturbed me because I begin to doubt myself and what I'm doing. I wonder, are we wrong? Should we bother to go on, and am I personally doing anything worthwhile? Are we, Coley? Am I?
Don't ask me, Hank.
I am asking you. Are we making sense with this CD thing? I've got to know, Coley. I'd hate to look foolish.
You're asking me, Hank. If I were you, I'd let hell freeze over before I'd quit.
Why?
Because people like you are the only life insurance left to this country, that's why. The other gilt-edge policies have all run out. First the friendship of the other great powers, then our lead on the bomb. Gone.
Well, say just that in the transcript.
I can't.
Well.
Nice view of the cities from this window, Coley. Terrific skyline. Big, blustering, beetling, beautiful.
You've been reading Kyle Sandberg.
All I can do is just look and think of how better men than I am built all that out of the prairie. It kind of makes a small lump in my throat. But I suppose that's me.
Nothing the matter with you, Henry.
I sure hate to think that White Plains and Kings Mountain and Valley Forge were a waste of those early people's valuable time and blood. Sure hate to think Gettysburg and Shiloh and Cold Harbor happened just so some bum with an airborne hot rod and a gift of grab could take what Americans fell dead to give us. I think those game fellows in knee pants who signed the paper July 4th, 1776 didn't risk stretching their necks just so we'd blow it because a traffic jam inconvenienced somebody.
Why don't you go home, Hank?
Sure, Coley. It's a beautiful view from your window. I hope it stays.
It was a magnificent view from Coley's window. From where he stood, Coley could see to the Atlantic seaboard in the year of our Lord, 1620. He could see himself as a small, starry-eyed kid chanting in school assembly that the breaking waves dashed high on the stern rock-bound coast. Yes, landing of the Pilgrim. And all the stupendous pageant from ocean to ocean thereafter. Once, his thoughts were scattered but urgent and piercing. Once, as a young man, he'd reached through the iron pickets and plucked a violet from Jefferson's grave. It was in college. Henry'd been along. He'd remember it. Coley had told Hank.
I like to think that the molecules of fragrance from this violet are mixing right in with the molecules of the breath Jefferson drew. Or Lincoln. They're all around us, you know. Molecules that people breathe from the start of time.
Or that Yankee Doodle breathed. Or Johnny Reb. Or Billy Yank, or more lately, G.I. Joe, once breathed.
Hank's right. It's a hell of a view.
The view changed. A bare plain lay beneath. And on it, wheeling Sioux Indians besieged a circle of white Conestoga wagons seeking the Abenakis River and a nation. The view changed. Now frontier Fort Abenakis lay below, and a delicate double beading of blue would be where the 9th United States Cavalry sorted to hold a precarious foothold in the plains where the two cities would rise. Sorted, in fact, all the way to Belleau Wood, the bulge and the outpost of the world, holding the nation. For some view. Coley Borden went back to his desk and said, pretty soon, he began typing.
We, the people of America, have for more than a decade refused to face our real fear. We know the world could end. Several nations have perfected instruments which make that ultimate doom more likely.
Drink your orange juice, Lenora.
We have relied on ancient instruments of security while leaving relatively undefended and unarmed the targets of another war. Our cities. Oh, this is great. This is absolutely stunning. Farmers dig cyclone cellars and rod their barns and ground their aerials against the wild wind and the lightning. We set up levees against floods, engines against fire, police against crime. What of the peril of world's end?
Honey, your orange juice.
We face the age of radioactivity, the blast of neutrons, the killing solar fires with pea shooters and squirt guns. To the shattering facts of fission and of fusion, we answer
with popular indifference or apathy. 10 years have gone by. We could, at vast expense to be sure, have decentralized our cities. We didn't. We could, at great expense to be sure, have built mass shelters to save hundreds of thousands of lives. We didn't. We could, at least and cheaply, have learned to empty our cities swiftly. We didn't. The dislocation of human beings, the drills and the inconveniences were held to be intolerable by a nation bred in dislocation and in hardship. Now the sands of a decade are run out.
Wow.
Strong stuff.
It's terrifying.
Well, it's time it was.
What else, Chuck?
Now we cannot challenge a powerful and ruthless enemy without venturing world's end. Quite possibly our death notice is written. Perhaps a few months
further along the orbit of this disenchanted planet.
That will do, Kit.
That's the final paragraph, Mother. Then our flight from reality and from the ideals of our founders will get this globe of ours torn to hot flinders spinning gases. To us citizens of Green Prairie, this promise of inferno poses a simple question. What new folly can you dream up with your coffee, your grapefruit, your first cigarette to keep yourself a while longer from facing the truth?
Some powerful writing there.
Oh, boy, I tell you, this CB has sure got it.
Finish your coffee, dear, then hand me the telephone.
Coley Borden talking.
Coley, darling.
Minerva, how are you this morning?
You're fired.
Minerva! Hello!
October. A cold wind from Saskatchewan and Manitoba, smelling of snow and muskcake. Chuck Connor's leave was open. He drove with Lenore into the moonlight. They parked near the river, murmurous with history and the ancient dreams of long silent pioneers.
Remember how we used to park here after our high school dances?
Yeah.
This seemed like the place to talk to you, Chuck. I want you to understand about me and Kit.
Oh, it's okay, I told you.
It isn't okay. It's the way it is, that's all. In high school, fine. You were my guy. But school day sweethearts seldom marry, you know that.
I'm also broke. I know that. I won't be out of the army for 6 months. I know that. And architecture is long and time is fleeting and the girl is 24 years old has to look around.
Chuck.
But in a year, we'd have a little house in Edge Plains.
Would I like that?
Well, not every single minute of it, but it's a start.
I'd hate it.
Why?
A crummy little box in a row with several dozen exactly like it. Filled with several dozen young wives having babies that they weren't quite ready for. Oh, it's no good, Chuck. Look around for a plainer girl with some real character.
You quit college that you love because you haven't got any character? Quit so you could come home to try to help your parents keep their lives together? No guts, you're telling me?
They need me terribly.
Well, you have to bail them out by marrying a man you don't love.
I don't know that I don't love him, Chuck.
I know how much you know, Lenore.
If I fail Mother and Dad now, they'll be gone completely. Drinking too much, fighting and insulting each other wretchedly, and insulting the life they gave me. I can't stand that, Chuck. It's sordid, yes. But maybe I can save something out of it for them. I don't know, Chuck. I'm their only chance.
You and Kit Sloan.
Why do we have to live and compromise all of our lives?
For God, for country, and for Yale, I guess.
Oh, Chuck, please don't talk like that.
Shine on, harvest moon.
Chuck, I might not see you again for... Would you like to kiss me goodbye?
I'd be scared to.
Yes. All right, take me home.
The colonel of the Texas Air Force Base waited until the still-faced men at the conference table could hear him. Assistant Intelligence Officer Charles Connor was at the table in the absence of Major Pryor.
As you all know, contrails have been spotted for years over Alaska and Canada. We've known for a long time that the enemy has reconnoitered our northern defense perimeter. Lately, photographic evidence places them over the United States.
Have there been any contacts, sir?
None of our interceptors has ever gotten up fast enough for a good look. I have in this briefcase, gentlemen, secret orders for a new friend or foe recognition pattern. Using that, we're to keep our eyes open, photograph everything we see, and when and if you can overtake it, fire on it. The bombers can go up and stay up and cruise up there. Bombers are to do the job. That's all.
Late November, Harvard versus Princeton, Ohio State versus Michigan, Thanksgiving. On the calendar, late November. On the timetable of the enemy, X day minus 30. It was a beautiful, a priceless morning. Chuck was home again, home for Christmas. The knowledge of Chuck's nearness next door and his irredeemable fineness once she gave Kit Sloan a date for the wedding brought a surge of decision and desperation upon Lenore Bailey. On that cut crystal last Saturday morning before Christmas, she faced her weak, scheming mother and her weak, negligible father whom she loved and told them.
What you're saying.
I do know. I can't help.
In your hands, Bruce. Listen to her once.
I heard her. It's her life, Netta.
It's all our lives. Don't give me that droopy talk. You're going to marry Kit Sloan, Lenore, and that's it.
I can't marry someone I don't love.
Do you know what you're saying? I mean, do you know what it means to your father?
I don't know. I think so. I don't know.
But isn't any but, Lenore. Your father gambled away $5,000 at the track and tried to make it up at the bank, and Minerva Sloan caught on.
Oh, no.
These gamblers were threatening him, and they'd have killed him if he didn't pay up.
Oh, I don't think they'd have gone that far, Netta.
What do you mean you don't think they... You lifted Jessup's bond, didn't you?
Oh, sure, but I don't think
they'd
have
gone... Then why did he need $5,000 to Hart if he didn't think they'd... What kind of a line was it, then, you were handing me?
What line? Are you insinuating?
I don't know. You tell me.
Stop it! Stop it! Leave him alone. Let it go, can't you? Let it drop as just plain, simple, clean, old grand theft. Keep it clean, shall we?
Look, Lenore, I know Minerva Sloan now. Minerva feels even an unsuccessful marriage would be good for Kit, if you know what I mean. Get him on his way. Get him started on his responsibilities. Then, if it isn't working out, break it up. For years, Minerva's been hoping and praying Kit would get interested in someone to marry him, and you were it. Maybe you don't understand, mothers.
$5,000.
Otherwise, it's 5 years for your dad.
More.
All right. I set the date. Nobody else. When I'm ready and not before. Is that clear?
You are listening to a dramatization of Philip Wiley's novel, Tomorrow, with Orson Welles as your narrator, Mona Freeman as Lenore, and Marshall Thompson as Lieutenant Chuck Connor.